63% of the American adult population over the age of 30 has some form of gum disease. 63%. 52% have a restorative need, a filling or a crown.
Welcome to the Real Estate Secrets Podcast. This show is about sharing lessons in commercial real estate that were learned from trial and error and working directly with CEOs of billion-dollar healthcare organizations. Our mission is to teach the insider strategies used by the big guys to everyday healthcare operators in order to get access to the best real estate at the best prices.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Commercial Real Estate Secrets. I'm your host, Austin Hare, and our guest is Fred Ward. Fred is the CEO of Marquis Dental Partners. They started in 2015. They have 63 dental offices in the southeastern part of the United States. And so they've been growing very rapidly. And Fred, it's a pleasure to have you on the show today. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Austin. I look forward to chatting with you today.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about the early childhood. We were talking off camera, and you got a lot of great stories about what shaped you and what helped develop you as a person and get to ultimately the role of CEO. So where do you think it first started? Like, what was growing up like for you?
Well, I grew up in one of the great small towns in Vermont, probably 5,000 to 7,000 people. Everyone knew who you were as a kid. So if you were a bit wayward or, you got yourself in trouble, you were held to account because someone recognized you as, Fred and Shirley Ward's kid. And my dad ran a hardware store in town. And our town was an IBM town, so it was a really nice place to grow up. And parents were either IBMers or they owned a business in town. And again, no matter where you went, they knew who you were. And, I had a situation where I learned early on that you're going to be held responsible for your own behavior. As a seventh or eighth grader, after basketball practice in the winter, it was snowing, the roads are icy, we would go skitching, which is, you hang onto the back of a car, you squat down and you sort of ski behind the car, and it saved us from walking home. We essentially got pulled up the road and saved some energy, right? But we were doing this one night and a police officer saw us. Now, my buddies are a little quicker than I am. They took off. I stood there frozen, and he backed me into the police car and asked my name. Well, my dad has the same name. So he didn't say anything. He just sort of nodded his head, and he took me right over to the hardware store. And he walked in, and my dad greeted him by his first name, and he greeted my dad by his first name. And I thought, oh, this isn't going to go well. And it did not go well. But my point is that in this town, you stayed on the rails. And when you went off the rails, there were consequences for your behavior. And that has stuck with me, throughout my upbringing. My parents were hardworking people. They flipped a coin for coffee money in the morning early on in their marriage. These are the stories. But they always talked to me about it's not what you make for money, Fred, it's what you save, and you always pay yourself first. So then as a kid growing up with jobs that I had in the seventh, eighth grade and right in through high school, I would ride around town on my bicycle, one hand on the handlebars, one hand pulling a lawnmower behind me, and I would just ride around town, and people would stop me and say, hey, would you mow my lawn? And, pay me $2 or $3. And I'd be off to the next lawn. So I did that. I worked lining ball fields for the school system and, played on those ball fields at night and mowed them and lined them in the day, during the day. I worked for the bank, filing statements, hanging Christmas lights, just grunt work. But I always was required to put half of my money away. And then I had half of it for spending money, but I always had some money because I worked, and that was learning work ethic, being true to your word, showing up on time, being respectful. Those are things that I learned in Essex Junction, Vermont, growing up with my parents.
Yeah, that's great. Sorry, I'm gonna pause for a second. For some reason I hear an echo coming back. Do you know? It's weird. Like now I don't hear it, but sometimes I do. Are you? No, just when I speak, it's not there now. Do you? Okay. But can you go to your, where's your speaker set up to real quick? Do you mind looking at that on the bottom?
Sure. What do you want me to do with it?
Is it set to, I'm just curious if it's set to like default or is if there's something else
it's set to default.
Okay. And then what about the microphone?
microphone's set to default.
Okay. Well, it's not doing it anymore. It's it might just be, yeah, it might be. It's like there's no perfect software. Like Zoom, you know, you use Zoom, and then it's like they if their computer, their internet's slow, then it just doesn't record it. So then we switch to this because it's a little bit more expensive, but you know, it records everybody's stuff to the cloud. And then it's just like there's always something. So, all right, well, we'll continue. I think what it might be is that when it switches to me, for some reason, it's like for 2 seconds, it's a little bit of an echo, but then it goes away because right now it's fine. So, we'll
was that maybe, too much or no, was that about
no,
right?
No, perfect.
Okay.
So, okay, we'll pick up right where we left off. And I want to keep talking about this. Okay. All right. Cool. All right. So, yeah, it's interesting. So your dad was an entrepreneur. He kind of, you know, he ran his own. He owned the hardware store, right?
He did.
So did that, how did that affect your thinking in terms, because like, it's a little bit of a different thinking to become, it's risky, right? To go from having a guaranteed wage, being an employee, to like taking a risk. Not only are you not getting a wage, you're actually spending money and you don't know whether anything is going to come back. So do you think that affected your thinking a lot?
You know, Austin, I can't point to anything that would, you know, I'd say, oh, well, this happened and therefore, you know, I learned. But what I would tell you is that my dad knew that hard work, discipline, and, you know, grit mattered. And so he, you know, they toughed it out in the early days. I can still remember, you know, the dinner conversations because my mom left her job as a secretary to become the bookkeeper. And they would work together and they would come home, you know, and then the dinner table conversation was often about school. And then it would turn to business discussions that, you know, my sister and I might be in the other room doing homework. We could overhear them. And, you know, there were some stressful times for them, but they worked diligently. They reached out to people they knew who had successful businesses. And they weren't so above learning and listening and didn't pretend to have all the answers. And I did learn that. And that has, I think, over my professional life served me well, that I do listen and I do. I'm never the smartest guy in the room, but I am the best listener in that room. Mm. And I think that's a great skill. And I've been fortunate to have a great group of leaders that I've had the chance to work for.
Yeah, that's really cool. I think that's like the difference between a fixed mindset and a growth mindset, right? Like if you have a fixed mindset, then, you know, you're not, you think you know everything and you don't think anything's changing. And a lot of times it's pessimistic, but it sounds like you had a growth mindset and the fact that you're willing to listen, you're willing to take other advice and you're willing to change your stance on something, which I think is super important. And so I'm curious, like I'm curious as to what happened, you know, between then and being CEO of Marquee, like what's the story there? Like after that, like when you're in high school and deciding what to do about college or your career or whatever, like what was the path like for you?
Sure. It's probably not a path that unusual to most, you know, high school kids, juniors and seniors with college aspirations. And there was, you know, right or wrong today, we can, you know, judge all we'd like, I suppose, but my parents had an expectation that we go to college. So that was my mindset all the way through high school is you take courses that prepare you to go to college for 4 years. And in college, by the way, is a 4-year experience, not a 5 or 6. And that was also instilled in my sister and I and my younger brothers, 10 years younger. So he was much, much smaller at that time. But so if I just put together what I was in high school and tell you where I went to school, I think you'd say, okay, that fits. I wasn't, I was a really pretty diligent student most of my high school life. I was a B student. And then when I decided I wanted to go to a service academy, I began to get really disciplined around studies and then finished with a, you know, I would say a low A GPA. My SAT scores were, you know, I would say exceptional in math and really dreadful in English at that time. And nevertheless, I was a kid who had a closet that had my shirts together hanging in one location and my pants hanging in another and my shoes were together on the floor. And so I was very disciplined that way. So, and then I was in, you know, athletics, I was in student council and all of those things. So when you think about the what are service academies, West Point, Annapolis, and where I ended up going, the Air Force Academy, they're looking for people or students who are good students. They're athletic and they're leaders in other activities around school. Well, I fit that, I suppose, you know, not certainly not at the top of that list, but I made the cut. And so I went to school in Colorado, and it served me well. It's a school about leadership. It's what I enjoy. I got a degree in engineering, and I went out in the Air Force for 9 years as an officer and designed cockpits. And
wow,
that was cool. Fun. But you know, 9 years of running studies in a flight simulator and writing technical reports is great, but I want to work with people. I want to lead. I'm a competitive kid. I grew up around a bunch of IBM kids. They were bright. It was a competitive environment to grow up in. It served me well at the academy, where everyone else was brighter than I was, right? Athletic field competition. I played soccer. And so competition has been a part of my life for as far back as I can remember. So I decided after, 9 years, I wanted to get out into the world and lead. And I got the opportunity with a guy from PepsiCo, and I ran Taco Bell's in Cincinnati. So I had my own team right out of the Air Force. I had a great mentor at the time. And so I got a chance to lead a business. And, I like numbers. I love people. It was competitive, right? McDonald's and Wendy's want to kill me every day. I've got to go out and get the best players. And I learned a valuable lesson about that we should probably talk about. But after working for, at that time, PepsiCo, and then which became Tricon, and now today is known as Yum Brands, for 15 years, around the time candidate Obama was running for president and began to talk about universal health care, I thought to myself, I'm in my mid-40s. If this guy wins, healthcare is going to be the lead story on the news every night. It's going to become a topic that the people that haven't had healthcare benefits for their whole life are never going to relent and give up having that benefit. So there's going to be all of these people coming into healthcare. Their healthcare is going to explode. Healthcare is going to need leaders. I need to figure out what an engineer that sold tacos and chicken for 15 years, what can I do in healthcare? And as luck had it, a headhunter called me and had an opportunity at a dental group that does the same type of work that we do at Marquee Dental. And I interviewed for that role and got it and had a chance to lead a group supporting dentists in Dallas. And I did that for 4 years. And then I had an opportunity with another group as the chief operating officer. I did that for a couple of years. And then I got the call with Marquee. And so let me take you all the way back to say, the story about my dad as an entrepreneur in a hardware store. My dad made a bet on himself. And the lesson I took from that is there's no risk if you take the bet on yourself, right? Because you're gonna work until you succeed. And so through my life, I've never been afraid to learn, but I've also never been afraid to bet on myself and at least have enough self-confidence to take a shot. And so failure, failure is going to happen. It happens to people that take risks. And I have not had any shortage of failures. One of them that I alluded to a second ago, when I first got to Taco Bell in Cincinnati, I believed that I was such a strong leader and an inspirational guy that the managers that I had leading the 24 restaurants would easily fall in behind and follow my lead. And what I realized was that with 24 of them and one of me, there were 25 agendas, 25 different objectives, and so on. And so as much as I worked to bring this team toward the goal line that Taco Bell had established for us, I wasn't getting the movement fast enough. And so as I sat back and wondered with glassy eyes and, having worked myself to death, I realized the problem is I don't have players that want to win as much as I do. And I don't say that to be critical of them as much as to say, look, they had their own objectives for the role they were in. They didn't align with where I wanted to go, and I had to find a team that could. So I went out and recruited, and I mean, in a matter of about 8 months, I got the top two Wendy's managers in town. I got the top Bob Evans manager in town. I got the top two Burger King managers in town. And pretty soon, our results as a team started to turn like this, and everything, it was like the scoreboards lit up. we were throwing up threes and everything was going in. It was amazing.
Wow. I want to, can we dissect this a little bit? It sounds like what happened here. So you are hired on to be the regional leader. So that means you've got a bunch of different locations that you're over. And, I know off camera, we talked about this a little bit, but you kind of thought you could rally a bunch of guys and motivate a bunch of guys who didn't have any motivation. And that sounds like that was the biggest problem, is like trying to make people do things they don't want to do. And so it started kind of like you had to start from scratch, essentially, with the team. And so that's when you went out and looked for the best talent to maybe, I think you might have replaced some of the guys that were on there that just weren't willing to get on board. And so I know it's like they always say, hire slow, fire fast. A couple questions, like, did you have to fire those guys? Were you able to do it quickly? And then also, how did you like tactically go about recruiting people from other, organizations? Cause that's a challenge in and of itself.
Sure. Well, let's break that apart. The hire slow, hire slow and fire fast, the way the managers I had, the way they were, the way we worked through this was some of them saw the talent coming in, realized the bar had been raised, and opted out, right? So that's the best, most seamless, they go away that way. Alternatively, I had to free up some futures, which, invariably leaders have to do sometimes. So, you just work your way through that, you prioritize and so on and so forth. And some people, to their credit, raised their game. They saw the talent coming in. They said, hey, this team's going to win. I see the talent coming in to help us win. I'm staying. And they raised their game. And it was beautiful to watch. So that's the first part of your question. The second part is, how did you go about doing this? Interestingly, my neighbor was a Wendy's manager. And we were at a block party. And I was shooting the breeze with him, and I asked him what he did, and he told me he was a Wendy's manager. And I started talking to him, and his wife came over, and his wife said, he was just the manager of the year. And I thought, oh, you've got to be joking. So, I put a beer in my back pocket the next night, one in my hand, and I walked over around the block. His backyard and my backyard were adjoined. I walked through the backyard and around the block and knocked on the front door, and he answered. And I pulled a beer out of my back pocket and I said, hey, here you go. How are you? You got a minute? He said, sure. And we stood outside and just started talking. 2-3 weeks later, I said, hey, why don't you come make tacos with us? And so anyway, I signed him. Well, his best friend was in town. He was a great manager too. His best friend started hearing from my neighbor about how great it was working at Taco Bell. I got him. And then I would interview these guys and Bob Evans. And one day the manager, the Bob Evans, came over and he said, I see you in here all the time. What do you do? And I told him, and he sat down next to me after the interview I was doing, the guy left or the woman left, the manager, the Bob Evans, sat in the booth with me. And he said, can you tell me about what it's like to work at Taco Bell? I said, look, why don't you and I get together after you're done here and we'll talk about it. He said, okay. So I ended up getting him. He was the Bob Evans manager of the year in Cincinnati. So it just went on from there. You got one all-star, their friends want to join. You've got to lead. You've got to treat people well. You've got to do the things that great leaders do. And I did my best. I'm not claiming to be a great leader, but I am telling you that I care an awful lot about people. And that comes out in the way that I interact. It comes out with the way I treat people, the recognition and rewards that I provide. That comes out. And I did that. And, if you're a manager of Bob Evans or you're a manager of Wendy's or any other place at that time, and you're not getting a thank you once in a while or recognition in front of your peers at a monthly meeting, you sort of, day to day, that's tough. Once a year, I got an award. I got a trophy. Great. But for 11 and a half months of that year, I got nothing. Nobody ever said, thank you. I was grinding away. I'm sweating. I'm working weekends. I'm doing closing shifts. I'm away from my family. Nobody said thank you. I did say thank you, Austin. I did do those things. So that word travels. And so once you get a rock star from a competitor, they start talking to their peers from that competitor. And pretty soon, the doors open. You've got people pursuing you rather than you having to go out and poach directly. So,
yeah, that's huge. I think it's always really nice just to have those things that are like very tactical, like, oh, I gave him a beer and we chatted and it took 3 weeks. And so like, you know, it gets my gears spinning as well. And so I love having the practical strategies. And so from there, like, I want to transition to the Marquee, you know, how you became CEO of that. So like, you know, what did, like briefly, how'd you go from, you know, Taco Bell to Marquee?
Well, again, I thought to myself, I had gone from Taco Bell in the U.S. to KFC internationally, and I was working internationally for about 3 years. And again, as candidate Obama became President Obama, it became evident to me that healthcare was going to become critical, right? You know, a bigger industry. It was going to take off as more people came into came into having healthcare benefits. There was going to be a need for leadership and so on. And so, again, I had no idea what those jobs looked like for a guy with my background. But, again, luck had it. Headhunter called with an opportunity that I pursued and ended up getting and worked in that role. And came to love dentistry as a support person for dentists. Dentists are amazingly gifted with their hands, as are hygienists. And, you know, we often think, Austin, about the visible evidence of dentistry, right? Oh, my teeth are white, my teeth are straight, I'm not in pain. Everybody assumes those things. Oh, yeah, I must have a great dentist. Probably do, right? That's probably a fact. However, if you really dig into dentistry, you learn that dentists are the one profession that can fix your systemic health on the front end of this, because, you know, I'll give you the stats quickly. 63% of the American adult population over the age of 30 has some form of gum disease, 63%. 52% have a restorative need, a filling or a crown. And here's the other stat that's alarming. 54% of the American population are not in active dental care. So, you know, one leads to the other, right? With less than half in active dental care. And by the way, that number, 54%, hasn't really changed in 12 or 14 years. Mm-hmm. So we're not activating more people into dental care. All right. So with less than half an active dental care, active meaning one or two visits per year, and in my world, two or more visits per year, because, again, 63% have gum disease. And if we say to people, you have disease in your mouth, what do they say? Well, my reaction is, get it out. You know, help me.
Yeah,
that's what dentists and hygienists do. And if you come in regularly, we can help get rid of your disease, eradicate it. And then, you know, if you give us the time, we will restore you to health. And in a matter of 2 or 3 years, and probably more money than you thought, we will have you, your oral health will be really good and in a position where you can maintain it at home, given the proper tools to use at home, right? And so if that happens, systemic disease goes down. Diabetes, low birth weight babies, these sort of things diminish, right? So dentists really do remarkable things. They get very little credit for, other than the visible things, like, oh, my teeth are white, or my teeth are straight, you know, an orthodontist I saw, you know, I got whatever. You know, that's great. And again, if we're not in pain, we think, I don't need to see the dentist. My teeth are white enough. I don't need to go see a hygienist or a dentist, you know. It's not that way. They are healthcare professionals. They're here to help you with your overall health. And they are, in fact, the front end of your health, because what goes in your mouth goes into your system.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's super important. You know, my background was health and fitness as well. So I had a couple of fitness centers, and you see the way that the whole thing plays together around your health, right? Like, obviously focus mostly on the fitness side, which is like punching and hitting stuff. But like from the diet side, like what you eat, was such a huge thing. And then, you're lowering, like when you get more fit, you get more healthy. And that doesn't have to be true. Like there's some bodybuilders who like, they eat a bunch of stuff, take a bunch of supplements and they look fit, but they're not really healthy. It's not good for their body, the amount of mass they have, the weights in their joints, etc. But in general, like if you're eating healthy in order to lose body fat and you're being active to increase your heart rate, like you're going to fight off disease in the same way that, like, you know, having a healthy mouth helps you have a healthy body. And so I think it's a really important facet. Like, and I noticed you look like a very fit guy as well. So I think it all goes, like, having that discipline, you know, just from an individual personal responsibility perspective, goes full circle. Because, like, there's a saying that goes around, like, why do millionaires have six packs, right? It's because, like, those same disciplines that they put in their life to create financial freedom a positive financial outcome, they do to also create a positive, healthy outcome for their lives. And so, yeah, I think these things all play together, and I think it's really important. And so, in terms of, like, you know, you came on the marquee in 2015. What was it like? Why did they recruit you? Like, what kind of value were you bringing? And then, like, let's walk through that. Let's walk through the site selection process, or even, like, the how you identified new practices. And, like, I'm curious to, like, how you grew the people, and then how you helped grow the organization and the number of locations as well.
Sure. Well, let me say this. There was a team put together in the early days of Marquee to go out and build a platform that would support dentists. And so that team, with an investment and support from Chicago Pacific Founders, a private equity firm, built a platform from zero practices to 24 in a matter of 15 months. And they did a remarkable job, you know, acquiring practices and forming partnerships that endure today. And around the 15-month point, I think they had concluded that they needed to begin integrating these practices into one platform to get the benefit of centralized services. And so I got a call it's interesting. I had years before interacted with this headhunter, and he and I became friends after that. But what he remembered about me was that I talked about team building and uniting people toward a cause. And so he called me a day or two before Christmas of 2016. And he just said, hey, look, they need you here. Here's the challenge. You're the guy. I sort of went through it with him, like, tell me more. No, I'm not interested. I'm going to stay where I am. Well, fast forward, I took the job. I was offered the job and took the job 5 or 6 months later. And that was the operating officer job, and came in and really went on the road. And then I do this every time I change a role. I go to where the action is. I cannot be in the office, pushing paper. I've got to be out and go meet the team that's making this happen every day. And so I went to every office in, I don't know, a couple of months, and met the team, and I listened, and I asked, you know, a couple of questions. You know, what do you love and what do you hate, or what would you want me to start doing or stop doing or continue to do, sort of thing, right? Start, stop, continue. I use it often.
Can I pause you for 1 second? It's funny that you bring that up, because that is, like, a very personal type thing. So, like, when we were doing, you know, my wife and I have done, like, marriage coaching and stuff like that. So that's actually one of the things that they recommend you talk about, is like, hey, what is it that you like? What is it that I'm doing what is it that I'm doing that you don't like, that you want me to do less of or stop doing? And then what's one thing that I'm doing that you like, that you want me to do more of? And so, like, just, you know, having those intentional conversations around a marriage, you know, it's helped us a lot. But was that something that you got in business, or was that something that you got from, you know, I don't know, coaching or marriage counseling that you then applied to business?
Yeah, it was business. Yum Brands does an amazing job developing leaders, and it was something that I learned there. But I love the application, and I can see, having been married 37 years, I can see how that very simple approach, right, can open up a conversation that is very constructive and beneficial to a couple trying to work through some rough spots, which invariably we all experience in a marriage. But it is a very simple thing that can be applied to business, and that's what I did. And I listened, and then I came back and began to act on what I heard, and continued to reach out to the key, you know, who I thought were the thought leaders among the doctors on things to do. And you know, from there, a year passed, I was offered the opportunity to become the chief executive. I was happy to have that opportunity, And so then we went about beginning to grow again and buy and build is the, you know, sort of the mantra. And we began to form partnerships throughout, you know, Arkansas, Alabama, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Florida. And we also then began to, you know, I had a background. I've probably opened, you know, 30 or 40 de novos, Austin. So I had experience with de novos that I was eager to use. And a woman who came with me to Marquis Dental, Andrea Metz, had been the boots on the ground through many of those de novos. So we went about site selection, as you mentioned. And you know, I have a couple of, you know, sort of hard and you know, they're driving concrete for me. These are the rules of the road for de novos, right? One was always Starbucks as a co-tenant. And the reasons for that are many, but you know, they drive traffic. They do take up parking spaces. You know, but they drive traffic. They are visible. They're a well-known brand. They're an everyday use brand. And I love that co-tenancy with them. I you know, obviously visibility is critical. I like pedestrian traffic as well as vehicular traffic. You know, if I can be on a corner, I'd love that. However, banks, you know, banks tend to pay overpay for those sites. So we tend not to get them, and that's okay. But, you know, those types of things. Another one of my rules is, you know, I can have a motivated doctor and put them in a haunted house and they could do great dentistry. I can have an unmotivated doctor and put him in a palace and they won't do anything, right? So you got to match talent and ambition with a great site. And, you know, I'll give you an example. Here in Nashville, we have a location in East Nashville. Dr. Aaron Spencer is a rock star. Aaron began working with us. We understood what her strengths were, where she was good. She told us what she needed and wanted in terms of clinical development and so on. We opened the practice, and the thing has just been, that office has just been a rocket ship. The people in East Nashville love her. She's got a Facebook page. It's really active, and it's just been a great story. So, you know, find yourself a proven, ambitious doctor and who does great dentistry and has a, you know, big personality like Aaron does. And get a site that's highly visible with, you know, again, a co-tenant like a Starbucks is always going to be a winner.
Yeah, I think that's really important. So it's cool that you had done 30 to 40 de novos before you started. De novos and acquisitions are obviously very different. And so, you know, it's like, I like your guys' strategy, buy and build. So you start with something and then you expand on it. Of course, now multiples are getting so expensive that a lot of times it kind of makes sense to do de novos, but then we are facing a similar problem right now in the de novo strategy, which is that construction costs are really high. The cost of real estate is very high. The cost of labor is very high. And so no matter what, I mean, costs are high, right? And so I think like the sitting there waiting for things to go back down to normal is a fool's errand because historically wages have never gone down. And I think that, you know, instead of trying to time the market, we're just gonna have to learn ways to adapt and learn ways to move forward. And so now I know you guys are kind of going to do a split prong approach. You're doing both de novos and you're gonna do some acquisitions as well. So what do you think is like one of your bottlenecks when it comes to real estate?
Well, I'll start right on the front end. The permitting process is arduous. It's painful. That entire design, layout, permitting, and you know, we had a circumstance through the holiday where we had given the project to the architect before Thanksgiving, and in early January, you know, he had put us off, and had reasons, COVID, and you know, all of this. And we got to early January, he had had the project 7 weeks and hadn't moved on it yet. And, you know, we just had to move on. And so we wasted 7 weeks. You know, if it took him 2 or 3 weeks, you know, he had done dental practices before. This wasn't a design. You know, my point is he had a head start on design and layout. This wasn't a completely new project for him. And yet, we lost 7 weeks time and we still weren't in permitting, right? So that process to me is excruciatingly long. And then, you know, as I talked with developers about work, you know, the idea of getting subs and, you know, to me, and this goes more personally as well, personally and professionally, if you say you're going to do it, then do it. And if you hire subs. I want them to show up and do the work on the days they're supposed to. I can't have a sub not show up. And I call you 3 days later and say, hey, I thought the electrical was going to be done. And you say, oh yeah, the sub didn't work out. You know, we can't have those sort of things. But those two things to me are bottlenecks. Now, the good news is in Nashville, particularly, and in Louisville, we've got another developer like this. They're very dependable. Their teams show up. The leadership at the site is exceptional. The leaders are there early. The leaders are the last to leave. The leaders are communicative. They set expectations on when to show up, when they can leave, when is lunch, when is break. And that process is fascinating to me. I was one of those workers as a kid working for the school. You know, we had a break time. You can be here at this time and you can leave at that time to go back on the site and work. I love that dependability and that discipline. And when that breaks down, it creates the bottleneck in the development side of things.
Yeah, it's interesting. And it's common to have that happen, like where you have expectations that aren't met, and then it just leads to frustration. You know, there's kind of a belief that people can save money, like, you know, healthcare organizations can save money by, you know, hiring this person to do this thing, finding this person to do this thing, finding this person to do this thing. It's like, but what we've seen, like one of our beliefs is that bring it all together in one communicative, you know, cohesive way of getting a new de novo location from start to finish. And so that's why, like, you know, we recommend, and we, it doesn't have to be us, but the way that we recommend doing it, and the way that we do a project is we start from level one, which is the analytics. Where are we going to go? Like, because, you know, you guys have 63 locations. It can take up a ton of mental bandwidth just deciding where am I going to go? Where's the best spot? I mean, you're looking at all these sites, you're looking at all these locations. You got to do the competition analysis and the demographic data, and you got to find out are you in a dental desert? What's the Medicaid population? I mean, there's a whole slew of things that you have to look at. And so we start with, like, from the high level. Okay, let's go through. Let's run the demographic analytics, the competition analysis, and find out where's a good trade area, first of all, or if you know a trade area, like what part of that trade area specifically, right? Now, once we got that, now let's start looking at the actual places that are available. What does that look like? Well, does it have good visibility? Does it have, you mentioned Starbucks, that's a great synergistic tenant. That's a great synergistic user. What are the anchor tenants nearby? We have a saying, it's like, do we want to drive through or drive to? Because if you drive to, like a grocery store, the average family goes there 2.3 times a week. You know, you can bet if they park their car, they get out, they're going to be sitting in your office. Now, of course, those are hard to get. So how can we get close to that if we can't replicate that? And then from there, you know, we like to call it stacking the deck in your favor, essentially. Like, there's a reason all the mega DSOs go out and they pay top dollar for these retail spaces. It's because it works, and they're getting, that's part of their marketing budget. So once you do the competition analysis, you find out the general area, then you do the specific, work to find out as a broker what's specifically available. And from there, it's nice to have somebody that can, if nothing's available for lease, it's nice to have somebody that can do the development for you. So that's our thesis, is like, we want to do the analysis. We want to do finding the locations, and then we'll do the development from the ground up. So that means like breaking ground or buying a building or redeveloping it. Because, you know, if you try and do all these things separately, you know, there's oftentimes not that communication. There's not that cohesiveness. And so when you know what the end result is going to look like, and you're responsible for that from the beginning, well, now you can start working with the architects, you can start working with the engineers, and you can actually, even though it might be more upfront, you end up saving more money in the long run because there's not all these revisions to the work you're going through. And so, you know, just use somebody who's got experience in that, especially in the healthcare, especially in the dental, who's done, you know, 10, 15, 20 projects, because if it's their first time doing something like that, then, you know, you could just be setting yourself up for failure, yet alone if you pick the wrong location, right? We often say that it's real, where your location is the first, like, most important decision that you'll make. So that's kind of how we view that. And I mean, yeah, you're like, it's a lot of work. You know what I mean? Getting the subs, getting the permitting, like those types of things. You really got to know what you're doing in order to be able to execute.
I love what you said, Austin, and your energy, by the way, around all of this is remarkable. But what I like about what you said, just from where I sit, I want one person to go to. I don't want one over here and one over here and one over here, and then the finger pointing happens, and, you know, you spend more time dissecting and trying to understand what's really going on rather than going to the one person, the one contact. And as you said, if you take it from, you know, cradle to grave, I know who to go to, right? And you're the one guy. And if the system breaks down, I'll say it this way, and I don't mean it to sound negative, but like, it's your headache, not mine. right?
Yeah.
I hired you to have that headache, right? This is the model that I'm in as a support organization for dentists. My promise to a dentist is I'm going to have the headaches of you know, vendor negotiations and human resource issues and so on. Those are my headaches, not yours. You be the gifted, great dentist that you can be, and I will take your headaches from you. And what you just described, that you're in your business, is you're the headache guy. You're the guy that's going to take this project from beginning to the end. And any headaches I feel, I just call you and say, Austin, here's my headache. It's yours now, right? And you take it and run with it. And I can tell you're good at it because you got energy for it and, you know, tons of knowledge and experience with it. So anyway, I love that model that you've got.
Yeah, yeah. So I hope that's helpful for, you know, people listening. And I know that your guys' strategy is to not buy the real estate, you lease it, which I do think makes, I mean, it's always situational, but for the most part, I agree with that strategy from the DSO perspective. But I'm curious if you can tell us a little bit more about why you guys are doing that.
Well, I mean, you could find yourself in the real estate business as well, right? I mean, if you just think about our model, if I just broke it down to its most simple parts, we find doctors who want to partner with us, and we want to partner with them, and we want to serve populations. So if I can, you know, go through the process you just described and find a great site where the population demand is there for dentistry, perfect. If I can find a doctor who wants a partner like Marquis Dental, then we can go there and we can begin to provide the services that we want to provide. And I don't need to own the real estate to do that. I need a location, I need a doctor, and I need a team to support that doctor. In its simplest form, that's what we do. And again, I can get into the real estate side of it, and I could, you know, there's certainly models where that works. That just isn't the model we chose.
Yeah. And, you know, that makes perfect sense. There's a lot of people who try and, you know, rock or run before they can walk. And so I get why you want to hold off on investing in the real estate or focus on the dental, because, you know, we're all, to an extent, we're limited by two, everybody's limited by two things, time and money, right? Like, you can't create more time. And even Bill Gates has mentioned that he would like to have more operating cash in Microsoft, like, to feel comfortable, right? And he's, you know, for a long time, he was the richest man in the world. So you just gotta pick and choose your battles. And so it's not necessarily wrong to invest in real estate, but if it takes some of your cash that you would otherwise be using or to reinvest in acquiring businesses, or it sits on your balance sheets and it makes banks more hesitant to lend, then, you know, are you getting the best ROI from your time and your money that you could be? And oftentimes the answer is no. Every now and then, yeah, sure, it makes sense, right? But a lot of times it just makes more sense financially if you really put it down, like, hey, if this is keeping me back from growing my DSO or my organization, then I'm really just tripping over pennies for dollars. So our recommendation is, if you're in that situation, just find a partner. You know what I mean? Work with a partner who can handle that part of, like, the capital, and they can handle that part of the time and the attention that it's going to take, like you mentioned earlier, and they can, you know, manage the property and manage the development and continue the ongoing process potentially as a landlord. And then, you know, like, our thesis is that we want to open that, like, back up to allow the doctors and the dentists and everybody else to co-invest in some of that real estate. And then you can all kind of participate in the upside. So yeah, our viewpoint that we look at it is, hey, just go, you know, find a partner to handle the real estate part of it.
Amen. I'm with you on that.
So this has been absolutely great. I got a couple of questions. First of all, sure, you know, if we missed anything that you want to talk about, like, let's go over that too. I'm also curious, you know, where do you see Marquis Dental going in the next 10 years? And then where do you see the economy going as well?
Yeah. So first, Marquis, we're doing exactly what we plan to do. We are buying and building, and we're doing it in a way where we're finding partner doctors who have the same growth ambitions that we have, and they're in locations that suit us. We don't have an ambition to go national at this stage. So just becoming a powerhouse, clinical powerhouse in the Southeast is our ambition, and growing at a pace that first of all, infrastructure wise, we can support at a you know, very high level, and continuing that for the next few years, and finding a you know, a growth partner that wants to take us through the next phase of growth would be, you know, I think it's very predictable. So, you know, call it a few years from now, we do that. And then from there, we grow. And again, the new partner may say, look, we want to go nationally. And we're certainly, the team is certainly prepared to do that. I mean, we'd obviously need more help and so on. But you can do it in the Southeast, you can do it across the country. You just have to go in steps, and you break the, you can't boil the ocean. So you just break this big project down into bite-sized pieces and you go. So I could see Marquee becoming a national player as needed, or as, as the ambition of the future investors want to do. But right now we are in the wheelhouse that Chicago Pacific loves and doing well with it. So I would just, that's my answer to your Marquee question, and thanks for asking. I love to talk about growth. In terms of the economy, I have a ton of confidence that the financial and economic leaders in our country are going to navigate, help us navigate through tough times. But look, in any economy, you can find the wins. My first mortgage payment, the interest on my first mortgage was 10%. And I remember that rate went up to 10.5. And I thought I was stealing money when I negotiated 10. Right. And I mean, it's a first time home buyer and, all the stuff. And this was years ago. But my point is, today, interest rates are supposed to creep up here in the next month or so. My daughter, one of my daughters, wants to buy a house. And she said to me, Dad, what's an interest rate that's reasonable? And I said, good grief, 4% doesn't seem like it's all that far out of, we're at historic lows. So is 4% or 4.5 too high? Well, look, I'd rather have it 3.5 for her, right? We all get that. My point being, we can find the win. 4% a win historically in today's market. You might say, well, geez, that's high. I get it, but still, that's a pretty good rate. Closing in on free money, right? So anyway, my point is, in the economy, you can find wins. That isn't to say that people don't feel pressure. I understand that. I'm sensitive to it, and so on. So, but again, I have confidence in the leadership that will get us through this. And look, we've enjoyed a really nice run since, 08 or even before that. And we had a couple year period there of tough times. But, it's been a really nice run for a lot of years. And some people have never, you say 10% mortgages to people, they go, what? Never heard of that. Well, yeah, I experienced it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. I appreciate you sharing that with us. At the end of the day, it is, you're right. It's historic lows, even at 4%, we get the difference from 3% to 4% sounds huge because it's a 33% jump up, but we got to think back and step back at the whole macroeconomic picture. It's like, well, that's still very, very small. And so, yeah, from 08 up to now, we've had nothing but a bull run. Where do I think the economy is going? I think we're still in a secular bullish cycle. I still think we have years and years of bullishness ahead. We're going to see growth. I mean, you can't predict the future, but it doesn't make any sense to sit on the sidelines. Like, in terms of buying real estate, where are we going to be buying real estate in terms of investing in the stock market? I'm personally going to keep investing in the stock market. And what you guys are doing, growing your locations, you're not going to stop growing the locations. Like, you got to keep moving on and forward, because if everything comes crashing down and you can't do it anymore, we got bigger problems to worry about than just like, should I have opened up another individual practice? So it's like, you kind of got to keep moving forward. I think it's, like I said earlier, I think it's a fool's errand to try and time the market. And so ultimately, I think, things are going to get improved, like sooner or later. Like, we had a little blip in the stock market where at the time of this recording, we're down, several percentage points, but it's not, to me, it's cyclical, not secular, right? And so it's like, it's short term, not long term. All that being said, I think this is great. Where can people, they want to learn more about what you guys are doing, like either through you or through Marquee, what's a good resource to find that out?
Well, easy, right? Straight from your phone, marqueedental.com. You'll find us, and we'd love to talk to anybody who's interested in joining or has a practice they want to partner with us. I'd be happy to talk to them. It's a fun time to be in dentistry. Dentistry is evolving. Consolidation's happening. It's an exciting, exciting space. And, Marquee's on the rise. So, come join us as we go off to the moon here.
Awesome. Well, I put those in the show notes, and anybody who's listening, you can go ahead and click that, or if you want to write it down. And thanks very much. We appreciate your time, Fred.
All right. Austin, thanks so much for the opportunity. Have a good day.
If you need help finding the perfect location for your practice, or you're ready to invest in commercial real estate, email us podcast@leadersre.com. That's podcast@leadersre, R-E as in realestate.com. Or go to leadersre.com and fill out our form. See you next time.